Welcome to the Working Fans Podcast, where today myself, the man called Dave, we are talking with ABJ. Check him out, the ABJ podcast on YouTube, where you can find Tornado Tag, Not Cool in High School, Five Questions with ABJ, Banging Beers, Blazing Buds. He is not Wahlberg adjacent. He is the independent Pat McAfee. ABJ, how's it going today?
What's going on, cuzzo? No, I'm not going to go that hard. What's going on, everybody? Thank you guys for having me.
Your journey kind of mirrored mine and Dave's in a way, because you do the podcast, you do wrestling commentary, but we kind of want to start at the beginning, where we start with most interviews. When did you get into wrestling, and did anyone specific in your life get you into wrestling?
My buddy Billy. So if you ever watch my stream intros when I'm doing my live streams, not so much the shows, but when I do like the hangouts, I have like a montage of different photos of wrestling and people I've met and my journey over the years. But there's one photo of me as a little kid and my buddy, and we're both being choked out by Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Billy was my gateway drug to pro wrestling. That kid was obsessed and got me into it. And I remember being at his house or his grandmother's house or whatever, because both of our moms worked a lot, so we would get like dumped at like a grandparent's house together or someone else's house babysitting. And I remember I watched a match, and it's funny that it kind of just came to me recently of what match I just seen, but I just remember it just a real tight ramp, and it felt like the crowd was on top of them, and then two guys come running out with really cool bright gear and tassels and all this fun stuff, and they go out and they just performed, and they got beat up by really big heavy set dudes. But I was like, even though they lost, they are my favorite, and I will follow them till the day I die. That happened to be WrestleMania 5, and it was the Rockers. And from that moment forward, the Rockers got me into pro wrestling.
Now, who were some of your other early favorites? Because the Rockers, so were you always a tag team high-flying fan? Or, I mean, were you like anybody of the day where it was a little bit of Hogan, little bit later on like Bret Hart?
So it's funny you say those two names. I was the opposite of those two. Even as a young kid, those wrestlers were forced on you. So like my mom's like, oh, I bought you all the Hulk Hogan stuff. And I said, yeah, I hated it. I didn't want anything Hulk Hogan. I wanted Macho Man. I wanted Piper. I wanted Perfect. I wanted Rick Rude. I wanted all the bad guys. I was the heel kid. I remember even as a young kid, I was kind of smart to it, where I was like, all right, Hogan's going to get beat up. Someone's going to hit their finishing move. He's going to Hulk up and he wins. And once I seen five matches, I figured that formula out, and I was like, I'm bored with him. So a lot of my time watching wrestling, I didn't care about the world title. Like, it meant nothing to me. I liked tag team wrestling. I liked Intercontinental Championship. I liked the characters like Million Dollar Man. Like, those stories brought me into wrestling more than anything that was going on with the main title.
You said Intercontinental Championship. And I think we're in one of the best runs of an Intercontinental Champion forever. Gunther's a guy they can wrestle in any era. Go back and look at 50s wrestling. So this guy's going to fit and he's going to make it work, right? What do you think about Gunther, Sammy, and even Chad Gable?
I think the fans want Chad, but I think WWE realizes that they built Sammy up to a point where they were never going to give him the world championship and everybody wanted it. And now they're trying to repay him back because his contract's coming up soon. So we're going to give you the Gunther possibly dethroning, but now the fans aren't behind Sammy as much as they were because the new babyface, so the new good feel-good story is Chad. So they're kind of booking themselves into a corner, and it doesn't seem like they know what they're doing, and unfortunately Gunther's title reigns on the stake with it.
I actually recently posed a question, you know, is this going to be Chad Gable turning heel? Like, I had this idea. I was watching, I don't remember what wrestling was, it was one in Ireland where David Starr and Jordan Devlin were trying to pin Gunther, Walter, at the time, and at the last minute, they've been trying to beat him for a year, and Devlin's about to do it. David Starr says no. He says, I want this. I have to be the man that pins him. And I keep looking at Gable. He says, I want this more. And I feel like, oh, that's an opening to turn on Sammy, cost him. Gunther's reign continues, and he says, I want it more, and you know, Gable could be the heel. People said they want Gable as the face, and I agree with that, but I also feel like he's the modern-day Kurt Angle, and he's going to do babyface heel. If they just give this guy the ball, he's going to crush it. What do you think?
I think we're at a time right now where I think a lot of the companies being held hostage by who can be coming in to be the savior instead of looking at the roster who's there right now. And I feel like Cody's run should have won last year, but they delayed it because Rock was like, oh, I can't come this year, but I'll come next year. So they had to prolong the story. And I think we're right at the point where they're trying to figure out what they want to do with Gunther, if they want to move him up or if they want to keep him where he is. And that big showcase is coming in Berlin, which is going to be his showcase show. And now the rumors are Brock's coming back. So it's kind of like, is Sammy and Chad a placeholder until they just to tell a story, and then Brock walks to the door and he goes after Gunther and all that gets erased. So it's like, I want to build my hopes up, but I feel like WWE as a company has let me down so much with, here's all the guys on TV that we've been forcing all the time on you. But as soon as a legend walks in the door, they trump everybody else in the roster. And as a fan, for me, that immediately turns me off.
When did you decide to go from just being a fan to actually trying to get into the content creation space?
So I got away from wrestling for a while, and I was a huge mixed martial arts fan. I went to a party once, and it was a UFC party, and I had no idea what UFC was. But I walked in, and I was young, and I was just like high school era. So wrestling's not the cool thing to go to high school and tell people you watch in 2000s. And you know what I mean? Attitude Era is over. We're ruthless aggression. It's not cool in high school to tell the girls like, oh yeah, I'm a big pro wrestling fan. You know what I mean? Like or comic books or video games or anything for that matter. But I found Tito Ortiz versus Ken Shamrock, and I fell in love with UFC. After like years later, I get back into it, and my friend's like, yo, you need to watch wrestling again. You need to watch. I'm like, why? And I'm like, Pete, there's a guy named CM Punk and Daniel Bryan who will scratch that itch for you of that old school wrestling. And then he's like, and the Peacock network is not Peacock, the WWE network's available. Because that was the biggest thing that held me back as a wrestling fan, was I didn't grow up with a lot of money. And pay-per-views every month were expensive. So if we did the tape-tating where someone recorded off their VCR, had a black box, and then we passed the tape around, and that's how you watch pay-per-views. So when they were like, yo, and then it's affordable and you can watch it, and it's not so much a big paywall like it used to be growing up, it kind of intrigued me, and I got back into it. And then everyone's like, yo, you should do podcasting. And I'm always very interested in industries where people are chasing their dreams or telling their stories. Or we live in a society now where people are so infatuated with a celebrity and what a celebrity went through, but then judge their neighbor down the street because he might be weird or off. And it's like, well, did you ever sit down and talk to him and find out why he is the way he is or what they went through? It's just, I guarantee it's just as fascinating as what a Kardashian's doing this weekend. So I was kind of like looking at that, and I went back and I started doing, I was like, I'm gonna start a podcast. And I sold all of my nerdy collectibles, all my Funko Pops, all of my cool old wrestling stuff that did survive that I had from when I was a kid. And it got me all of my equipment. And that was inspired by Kevin Smith. When Kevin Smith made Clerks, he sold all of his comic books, The Chase's Dream. And that's essentially what I did about 5 years ago. Got a whole bunch of really expensive equipment. And I said, if I put enough effort and time into this, I will be able to get back my entire collection and then some. I have not got back that collection, but we're working at it. But yeah, I just wanted to do podcasting. And then I did the storytelling side of stuff where I interviewed people and learned about local musicians and local artists or small businesses, or craft beer was another one I was doing for a while. And I was like, yo, I want to get back into wrestling. Like, wrestling's getting kind of cool again. Like, I want to, and I talk to my friends and then maybe go back and talk about older stuff that I might have missed. Because growing up, I was a WWE only kid. So I didn't watch ECW. I watched a little bit of ECW, but I didn't watch WCW. I didn't watch New Japan. I was like WWE loyalists, like nothing but WWE. And then around that time, AEW was in the rumors of starting up. And I was like, that'd be kind of cool to start a podcast around the same time a new company's coming in and kind of following that journey. And then we started going to independent wrestling shows, and it just kind of blowing up from there. And just, it essentially came down to just making content with my friends. And then I took it very, very seriously, and then I just started grinding.
How do you get the inspiration for the subjects you decide to cover? Because you were talking about talking to people. I assume that's the five questions with ABJ.
So the ABJ podcast is essentially a spinoff of a show I used to do called Interviews with Everyday People. And it was a cool title, but it took too long, and I'm all about my acronyms. So it was IWEP. And I was like, all right, that's fine. But when I rebranded, I had that show. I had the Not Cool in High School, which is like the pop culture. I had I had a paranormal show. I had a beer one, and I had a pro wrestling one. And when I got rid of all of them and I rebranded, I just made it my name, Anthony Blackwell Jr., ABJ. It's not always a sexual innuendo, but if you take it as that, if that's how you remember it, go for it. I lean into it, you know. But it was essentially, I once again, Kevin Smith's a huge inspiration to me, because that dude gets paid to wake up every day and just be himself. It's not very hard to do research or be prepared for a topic if you're passionate about it. So like, I like watching movies. I like video games. I like comic books. I like pro wrestling. I like hearing people's stories. So don't go against the current, go what your strengths are and what you're interested in and follow that passion. And that's kind of what I did. And that's why I picked all of those topics, because it's all stuff that I'm into.
What do you think about Paul Heyman? He's going in the Hall of Fame this year. Are you a Paul Heyman guy?
I am a Paul Heyman guy. I do like myself some Paul Heyman, but not as a commentator guy. My commentary guys, I love me some Bobby the Brain Heenan and Jesse Ventura with Gorilla Monsoon. That is my bread and butter. When I try to do my style of commentary, I still want to be me, but I definitely pay a lot of homage to those, that era of commentary, because they did a lot of inside baseball. Like if you go back and watch old things, they're calling the wrestlers in the ring by like, sometimes their shoot names or a gimmick name that they gave up to them backstage. Like, and then people, like I go back and watch and you're like, why is he calling him that the whole show? You know what I mean? Like instead of the Nature Boy or Ric Flair, he's like, and Nate is out there. Like, but as like any other show, you'd be crucified for saying something like that. But it felt more personable to them because that was like calling a match like that, or Bobby the Brain Heenan making fun of Brett's mother. You know what I mean? Like, no, everybody at home was like, why is that even being talked about? But then you do your research and you're like, oh, that's funny that there's connection there. So I definitely lean on that era because I just thought it was pure and fun. And Bobby and Jesse Ventura were such good tweener. They were heels, but they also didn't do a thing where every bad guy was a good guy and every good guy was a bad guy. There's times where they liked the good guy in the ring and hated the heel and vice versa. So they weren't just dead set. If I'm a heel commentator, every heel on the show is my favorite guy. Like, no, you have to mix it up a little bit and ask and make the audience go, well, why does he like that guy but not that guy? Because the second they do that, now they're interested in you as the commentator and they want to find out, well, what makes that commentator tick and why is this guy cool and this one not? And they pay attention to what you're saying.
I noticed going back and watching old school like Jesse Ventura too, is he could be tough on the play-by-play guys. Like you had to kind of be on your game with Jesse. Like Jesse would eat you up if you said something stupid. Whereas, you know, now maybe a color guy might back off or, you know, they keep not. Jesse was not going to do that. He could definitely.
Gorilla didn't take it either. Gorilla would fire it right back.
Oh, yeah.
A great one, a great back and forth that we just talked about was at WrestleMania 5, where they're going, or Gorilla's like, what's the matter, Gorilla? You don't like when people aren't from your country? What, do we just tear down the Statue of Liberty? Is that what we're talking about? And Gorilla's like, my entire family are immigrants. Shut up. And it's funny that they're during this whole bit where they're talking about people not being welcome in the country or being a foreigner or whatever it may be. Ironically, they just cut away from Donald Trump, who's sitting front row. It's like, oh boy,
some of that early WWE commentary is wild, especially them referencing like the Terry Garvin School of Defense.
Yeah,
now when you know about all the controversies years later, you're like, that is a bold move to get that in there, but who else besides Gorilla Monsoon would be able to say something like that?
Yeah, no, it's really good. Or like when, if somebody back in the day was maybe openly out to the boys but not to the world, they'd be like, oh, him and Pat Patterson were hanging out backstage, you know what I mean? Like yeah. No one knew what that meant, but now in retrospect you're like, you appreciate it more because they would kind of throw those little jabs and ribs at people. And I feel like I've earned enough respect with some wrestling talent that I can kind of throw those jabs in, and people, if you know, you know, and if you don't, you ask.
And it's funny, sometimes when Dave and I are doing commentary, I'll throw in a line that I know will pop him. And sometimes the challenge is, how can we enjoy what I just said and not break character? And I find that's where the fun of commentary is, getting to play around in that space when you're more comfortable. Because when you start doing commentary, I don't know if I've ever had a more uncomfortable feeling of, I have to put myself in what I believe a commentator is and hope that we hit the ground running with this. We're either going to be decent or we're not going to get invited back. And somehow we've been invited back and paid, which the first time that happens, that is unreal in wrestling. You feel like, I've made it, I can retire now, and you're at like the lowest level, but you feel so good about it.
Yeah, paydays don't come for commentary early on, and that's fine. But I think for me, and I kind of, like, once again, I've been deemed as selfish or trying to get myself over on commentary, or maybe I'm not in the traditional mold or box of a commentator. And my answer to that is, of course I am. Like, a wrestler who tells me that I have to fit a mold of commentator to make you feel comfortable, no. Then all right, then you let that guy backstage write your character, and then you go perform it. You don't get that choice. You have to fit his mold. Well, I don't like that. Well, I don't want to be boxed up either. Why do you get to be original and I have to be what you think a commentator person should sound like? Because Vince McMahon has put in your brain what wrestling commentary should be. Why can't we be different? Pat McAfee's different. People love it. When John Moxley gets on commentator, or Kevin Owens, and they add a little humor, people are like, yo, commentary's funny. Because most of the time it's just background noise and people don't care that it's there, because you almost were told, like, as a referee, don't make it about you. Yo, you're all there. You're all making art. I'm not saying steal the show, but if you're part of it, if you're on camera, if you're being heard, be original, be yourself, have fun with it. But it's also a field where a wrestler will clip your commentary and put it on the internet and say, listen how unprofessional this commentator guy is. And I'm like, well, instead of sending that message, why don't you reach out and be like, hey man, just for my feedback, this is what I would have done differently. Why did you do it that way? Or what, you know what I mean? And the biggest thing is too, you know how many times I had a wrestler sit next to me and commentator, and I'm like, yo, can you shut up so we can say something and actually do our jobs? Like, I know you're trying to get booked next week, but maybe not sell yourself the entire time on commentary, because it's when you're on a live hot mic, it's not easy to improv that entire time. And most independent companies, at least my thing, they're not giving me sheets or notes or anything about who's wrestling that night. They just trust me to go talk in a microphone, because they don't really take commentary seriously. And sometimes commentators do, and sometimes they don't. And it's a tough thing. But at the end of the day, like, they're like, well, how come you weren't taking my match seriously? Maybe your match was boring and I was just trying to entertain myself on commentary. But we're not allowed to say that. You know what I mean? Because we're just commentator. If your match is dog shit and your commentary is talking about how they're picking their nose to be funny, maybe it's not so much they're trying to get over. Maybe your match is boring. Sorry. We're saying the intrusive thoughts out loud, but it's the truth. No. You know what I'm saying?
Because I've definitely had matches, Joe knows we're talking about, where like, oh shit, we got to do this one again. You know? And
dude, false finish matches annoy me more than anything. If I watch you get hit with a move that should kill you and you kick out or do this fighting spirit New Japan style where you just pop up from a finisher and Hulk Hogan out, because I'm, as a commentator, I have to set a flow. So opening match, I have to be up here because I have to bring everybody's energy up. And then, you know, I'm not saying dip, as the show goes, but you can't stay at that level the whole time. You'll kill yourself. You'll blow your voice out. And once again, you become background noise. You have to take them on a narration. You have, if there's a serious moment, if there's a comedy match, if there's a spooky character, you have to play into those roles and play into those characters. But also, the entire show can't be you at 11 and you super excited the entire time. You're going to have to take some dips and dives. And if you're booked mid card, you're probably a dip match where a commentary has to kind of adjust a different way, because they can't be at an 11 the entire time, because you have to start and end high. So it because that's the way a story goes. It's not the entire way through screaming at the top of your blade. And some wrestlers don't appreciate that. And it is what it is. And my feedback is, then go sit for 2 hours and do 13 match cards for $14. You know what I mean? Like, there's more to it that I think a lot of people don't take into consideration when it comes to commentary, and they just think it's easy. And I think more wrestling companies should look at podcasters who do 2 hour, 3 hour interviews and know how to talk and bounce off each other. And I think we're setting a trend of what the new era of pro wrestling commentary can be.
Because the Rockers, you know, got you into this, and then you talked about Punk. And when you were talking about, like, you know, earlier, why not just, you know, talk to somebody if you have a problem, basically, you know, and correcting. I remember just hearing a story recently where Shawn Michaels, I think he said he was on creative team back in the day for like a couple weeks or something. And might have said it with an ECW brand. And he said, I guess people were making fun of CM Punk, and they were making fun of the way he did his wrist too, which is like an MMA thing, right? And Shawn was the one, if you don't like what this guy's doing, why don't you just talk to him? Why don't you try to work it out? And I just thought, you know what? Like, it's such a simple life thing, right? Like, why don't we just communicate more? And yeah, I don't know. I want to piggyback off that a little bit, but I think it's...
Well, could you imagine if me as a commentator clipped every match that I thought was boring or dog shit, or you botched your move, and I made fun of you on the internet as a wrestler, as a commentator, and say, how does one commentate when someone can't even do a suplex? Well, if you don't do commentary or podcasting on a regular basis, and you train and do push-ups and do suplexes and in-ring work, try not to judge me the same way I won't try to judge you, because I know mistakes happen, and I know working a match is not easy to do. So just have that mutual respect. But I feel like the commentary guys get thrown under the bus so much on social media about not being up to par. And it's like, independent wrestling, we're all not up to par. We're all still learning. We're all trying to get our reps. We're all traveling around the country trying to chase this dream. Just because we're not running ropes doesn't mean we're less valuable.
100%. And I like what you said about podcasters making good or being potentially good commentators, because that kind of covers my next couple questions. And getting back to the podcasting and YouTube channel stuff, tell us about, so you've created the podcast, you get it going. What's the journey been like from the start to where you are now? You know, what have been some of the things you've enjoyed more? What are some pitfalls? Like, if you could put it into a long story short situation.
Oh, it's, I will try to keep it as short as possible, man, but it's one of those things where you have a dream, you have a vision, you have a goal, and you work hard at it. And times are amazing where you get to go, and I get to go from a guy who just went to a wrestling show to cover the event and be like, hey, we reviewed the show, to the people hearing that and being, how do I become a guest or be, because I never thought I would have guests of wrestlers. Like, I thought that was impossible to do. And wrestlers are like, can I come on and talk? And I did a couple interviews where we did it in kayfabe and character, and I was bored. And it's nothing disrespect to their story, but I'm someone who, like, I want to learn behind the character. Like, and I know that's kind of like, you're not supposed to break kayfabe, but I think most wrestlers get popular when they let that guard down. And I think in today's modern wrestling, I think everyone's pretty well aware of the shtick. You know what I mean? But yeah, going from there to being like the promoters being, hey, do you want to do backstage interviews? Do you want to do commentary? You want to help with production? Like, you know how to set up a microphone. How do we make our stuff look and sound better? Like, and I went and helped a lot of that, and I never thought that would be a thing. And then, like, hosting Q&As with Demolition and hosting a convention where Sting and Matt Cardona and all these cool people are there. And I'm involved in these cool moments that most average people in this as a fan in pro wrestling will never get. And I get to sit backstage with people and have conversations with people I grew up with, and I get to meet my heroes, and that's all amazing. And I'm very, very thankful for it. But then also, like, if you want this bad, are you willing to not go to your best friend's wedding because you have a wrestling gig this weekend? Are you not, like, a friend passes away, and do you not go to their viewing and their funeral to say goodbye to them because you have a wrestling show? Like, do you chase your dream or do you chase life? And I chose the dream, and that cost me a lot in my personal life. Friendships, it cost me relationships. I'm now divorced. You know what I mean? Like, in a 16-year relationship, because I was gone every weekend, and I would drive from Pennsylvania to New Jersey, from Pennsylvania to Atlantic City, from Pennsylvania to New York. I destroyed a car. It was hard to keep jobs because I'm trying to chase this dream, and I don't want to be a 9-to-5 factory guy. So it really comes down to, like, you got to find that balance where I got into it early, where I invested a lot of money in equipment and cameras and all this stuff. And it's just like, well, this is no longer a hobby. This is no longer just fun. I'm going for it. And if I'm going for it, I'm going to go all the way. And sometimes people can navigate and I'm just having fun with my buddies. And sometimes you're going for broke, you know. It's hard to navigate, but the best thing I would say is, like, just cherish it, man, because you're gonna have, if you put the work in, it's easy to look at all your negatives and all your downfalls, and they're the ones that shine and glare. But you have to sit back and reflect and be like, man, I did things that a lot of people would never do. And I'm very grateful for that. And it's all because of the power of podcasting and just communicating and meeting new people.
I'm so glad you said factory and not warehouse, because that would have hit a little. Well,
both. I've done factory and warehouse. Yeah, I've done both. I've actually probably done more warehouse than factory, to be honest with you.
I know. And it's one of those things that, like, just as the podcast grows, like, when you see the growth, like, Dave doesn't feel this as much, I don't think. But do you ever have imposter syndrome where you're like,
all the time?
You're like, should I be here? Like, somebody's going to come along and be like, you don't belong there. But then there's also somebody else that's going to come right after them and be like, no, that guy knows how to set up a mic. He knows how to mix. Like, we could get him to host the show if we need. And you're like, I don't know if I could host the show, but I'll try.
I've had a fake it till you make it attitude to get it when I came with anything in life. Like, the worst you could do is mess up, right? And if you mess up, at least you had the rep. You're like, I did it. I tried. I failed, but at least I did it. And I've always had that mentality. But it went from, like, for like my buddy Alex, who runs High Tension Wrestling, he was like, yo, you should be a commentator. And I was like, no chance, no way. And he was like, you should do it. And it's like, he's like my brother in a sense of, like, sometimes your closest people, you don't take their advice. And then some outside person's like, you should do commentary. And I go, you think so? Like, and then Alex is like, you son of a bitch, I've been telling you for 4 years. But it's, imposter syndrome is 100% real. I still sometimes struggle with it. Like, I was at a spot one time where I was backstage and I was with a bunch of people who are on TV right now. And it's me and my podcast host, Brian. And we're surrounded by legends and current on WWE, AEW, TNA people. And we're just sitting around in a circle and we're talking pro wrestling. Like, yo, what do you think of this Bloodline storyline? You know what I mean? Like, and it's we're and one of the guys in the room is a world champ somewhere, right? I don't think currently, but he was. And I'm just like, and I kind of look at my buddy Brian and he looks at me and he's like, what are we doing here right now? But we were accepted and we were just as part of the conversation than anyone else in that room. And you kind of step back and you're like, what is happening right now? Like, imposter syndrome is definitely a thing. But the thing is if you come in and you think you're doing a good job, people can always take your spot, right? Somebody will always replace you. But when they replace you, trust me, they're going to know if you do a good job, they're going to miss you when you're gone, because it's easy to replace, but you can't fully do it if they're looking for a certain thing that you provide that's different than everybody else.
My final question, as far as like current stuff goes, you asked, what do you think about this Bloodline storyline? Warden it into the Bloodline. We're headed into WrestleMania. You talk about it. WWE has a history of letting us down. Is Cody Rhodes going to finish the story at WrestleMania? Or is it really this story at all?
I hope so. I want the world championship to be freed up and moved around the company so we can still tell the Bloodline story and not hold up a world title. I have a lot of friends who are legit members of the Bloodline who are still in the independent scene that I would love to get work because of this story. Like, I want to see Fatu. I want to see Zilla. I want to see Lance on Oahu to get up there. There's another Uso brother out there that people don't know about. Like, a lot of Offa Jr. is all still out in the scene. If people can get more work because of this, I want it. I want that for them. But I think it's time for Cody to take the title and be that baby face we need for a little bit. And we can still tell the Bloodline story without the world title being held up. I think Roman has been doing a fantastic job with it. I still think it should have ended last year, but it is what it is.
Cody too, like, that is such a great story too. Like, I know it's been kind of joked around about, you know, the finishing the story thing now, but like, really, the guy, we talk about betting ourselves, right? This guy's the ultimate. Like, he's a great inspiration. He left, despite his father being Dusty, because he didn't like where he was in the biggest company in the world. He left it, betted on himself, started the number two, the alternative brand, got to the point where he was like, kind of like, okay, floundering here. I'm going back. They accept him, to the point they even let him keep his music. How often did that happen? Mm-hmm. And now here we are, headlining WrestleMania, where, like you said, I agree that Roman should have probably lost it last year. But here we are, even in a bigger setting. Let's not blow it again. Let's finish this. And we can still do Roman and Rock next year or something. And
actually, now that The Rock's on the board, he ain't going anywhere anytime soon. But I think what the biggest thing for Cody is that kind of bothers me with this story with The Rock is that I feel like The Rock's kind of inserting himself a little too much. Today's 2024 Rock does not hit the same for me as Attitude Era Rock, and I think he's trying to recreate that, and I think in today's time it's just not landing for me. Like, I telling the crowd they have herpes is just hilarious. That's so cool, you know I mean? Like, it just doesn't do it for me. But I see today's people on the microphone, and I think it's a testament to today's wrestlers. And I think what happens is WWE kind of conditioned us is, who cares? You see them every week. If a legend walks through the door, you're diminished as a talent because they're legends and you're not. And I kind of look at it and I go, dude, The Rock just tried to go mic for mic with Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes and lost, in my opinion. He lost. I think they're better on the mic than The Rock. And that's crazy to say, because he's, in our brains, the greatest of all time on the microphone. but we have MJFs in the world. We have Cody's. We have Punk's. We have Seth Rollins, who you give a microphone and they're very good. And they can wrestle probably better than The Rock has ever wrestled his entire career. And I think today's generation of wrestlers are just that good. And I think they need to start changing that narrative where if a legend comes in, you got to start putting over the younger guy a little quicker. Like a Goldberg shouldn't come in and take your world title off somebody like just like that because they can. And I hope we start getting into an era of wrestling for that. But Cody is your next John Cena. He's your next Hogan. He's your next babyface. He's your next golden guy. To put him in with The Rock right away, you just split his audience in half. So from now forever, you've divided your audience on your next big babyface. It took an audience a while to turn on Hogan because we got sick of seeing Hogan win all the time. It took us a while to hate on John Cena because John Cena won all the time, and it wasn't cool to like John Cena anymore. You started Cody off before he even got a world title with a split audience. And I don't think that was a good move.
It's going to be interesting to see because we're recording this late March. This is going to be coming out April 20th. So
yeah, we'll already know what happens at Mania. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be wild to see, you know, how things have played out versus how we're expecting it to play out. What's some of the best advice you've received over the time of doing and give us like a piece of advice for content creation? And then a piece of advice you've received in the wrestling business.
Okay, so the first one I'll say that I knew I was doing something correct is when you go out and people are like, oh man, like we never met, but they come up to you and like, yo, I love everything you're doing. I had a wrestler, his name's Jimmy Conway. He's part of a tag team called South Philly's Finest. And he's a straight shooter. He'll tell you straight to your face if you're good, if you're bad, what you're doing wrong, what you're... The one time on commentary, I said, oh, he's because I was still new. And I said, oh, he's getting ready for that apron spot. And I called it a spot on commentary. And he was like, yo, don't do that. That's too inside baseball. You know what I mean? Like, he goes, I like the fact that you do inside baseball, but don't go too, like, don't, you can't use terminology on comment. And I was like, you're 100% right. So I appreciated him for that. But he also said, he's like, you go on your social media brand and your brand is there. Like when I go to ESPN or I go to NFL, I want to see NFL. When I go to your brand or your page, I should be able to you interview people and that's all you see and everything that's about your brand is good and you put that out there for that. And he goes, not a lot of podcasters go on a thing and value their guest's time by making clips and promoting it and putting it out there for people to see. So you're doing a good job. And then from like a business standpoint, I got to sit with Mike Bennett and Maria Kanellis Bennett for hours at a convention one time and I kind of sat with them and they're like, and Mike was straight up honest. Like, if you need someone to follow on social media, if you're having a bad day or just need to get motivated, Mike Bennett is the GOAT. Like, this guy went from, you know, his hard times with drug addiction and struggling with a lot of stuff. Maria went through a bunch of stuff that, you know, she's kind of hinting at now on social media. Now that there's, you know, people speaking out about their time at WWE. I'm not insinuating anything. I'm not saying I know anything, but she's kind of saying like, yeah, it wasn't good for females there. And to almost be a joke and like you're in a character where your husband, you have to cheat on your husband on screen and like that kind of stuff goes down. And then when you leave the company, they diminish you so much as a person that the outside world sees you for your character and not who you are as a human being. Like that affects people. And they kind of like said, just bet on yourself. Like you shouldn't be coming to these shows and working for free and doing nothing for yourself. Like, did you get content today? And I was like, no, I just helped with the meet and greet and I did this and this. And now I'm getting ready for commentary. And I'm like, yeah, you should have a camera here. You should be recording stuff. You should be talking to us on camera. You should be doing all of that. Like, stop being so nice and putting everybody before you and your brand and work for it. Because no one's going to give it to you unless you go for it. And that's what they kind of told me. And now, look, like, dude's on AEW and he's killing it. Like, I will always be a Mike and Maria fan. They were just really, really helpful in a conversation where I was just a stranger to them at one point and we were just kind of hanging out and I was their handler at a meet and greet and they gave me some of the best advice of all time.
Can you drop one content creator advice and then one wrestling business advice on the people?
Be careful what you say on your channels about pro wrestlers, because if you hate a wrestler or you say you hate a wrestler or you talk about a wrestler, there's a probably 80% chance that your favorite wrestler is their best friend. Or they know them, or they've worked with them, or they've shared a couch together, or they like were in a car ride together. It's a very high likely probability. And wrestlers talk. And if you go and conduct yourself a certain way as a content creator, it's seen. Even if you don't think it's being seen, it's being seen. Wrestlers search it out and see their names and see the hashtags and see when they're tagged or see when they're talking about things. And if you want to get to the next level, I'm not saying kiss everyone's ass or say everyone's amazing, because if a wrestler doesn't respond to you as a character, that's not a problem. But to say they suck in the ring, or they say they're ugly, or they're so hot you would do this to them, all that stuff is so unneeded, and it's heard and it's seen. And it probably is a huge reason why you're not getting invited on the other side of the guardrail. So as a content creator standpoint, that would be my advice to give. On a personal life standpoint, prioritize your time. If you're a husband, if you have kids, if you have a wife, if you have a job, if you have best friends, if you have family, content's cool, chase your dreams, but also prioritize your friends and your family as well. Because I'm at a point now where a lot of friends don't text me or call me because they're like, yo, we figured you're busy this weekend. And then you feel like you kind of end up alone when you hit that spot where maybe content's down, or you feel like you're down on yourself, and then you go to reach out to your friend, but you haven't talked to them in 6 months because you were too busy chasing your dreams. So prioritize that. Have fun with your content. Have fun chasing your dreams, doing those shows, doing what you got to do, but also make time for the people that matter.
I'm inspired now just hearing that. It hits a lot of what like Dave and myself have been going through, and it's great advice. Now, we've talked to you for a while here. You've been very gracious with your time. It's time to get yourself over. Let the people know where to find you.
ABJ Podcast, pretty much any audio side. You could Google, Spotify, Apple, and if you try to find it on a podcast app and you can't, DM me. I'll try to put my best to put it out there. Also, YouTube. My name, Anthony Blackwell Jr., or ABJ Podcast. I do interviews with anyone independent, so musicians, artists. I'm down to talk to anybody. It doesn't always have to be pro wrestling, but I do interview a lot of independent pro wrestlers. I do a thing called 5 Questions with ABJ. So instead of doing like an hour, 45-minute, 2-hour podcast, I meet somebody to show. Everyone gets the same 5 questions. And at the very end, you get a question catered to you. So if you watch 5 questions, wait till after the credits, like a little, almost like a post-Marvel credit scene. But they're like 5 to 8 minutes long, and you can knock a bunch of those out at a show, and you get those street interview style things where it's spontaneous and on the fly, and everyone gets the same 5 questions, so it kind of makes it super simple as a content creator. We do Tornado Tag Podcast, where we talk about a lot of history stuff, where it be like the history of Sputnik Monroe or Dusty Rhodes or Ole Anderson, or we do old school reviews, like we did a few WrestleMania reviews before on the lead up to WrestleMania, and we start every show with a little segment of like what's going on in today's wrestling. Is there a big storyline that we're into? So we mix today's wrestling in, but then we give you like a little bit of a history talk of something that you may not have known about that you can go back and research. Not Cool in High School, video games, pop culture, horror movies, reviews, where we just have a friend on and we talk anything pop culture or a movie and we discuss it and review it. That's still kind of new. I'm kind of working that out. And then yeah, just there's a whole bunch of content coming. I'm trying my best. And then also Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I try to go live every night for Raw, SmackDown, and AEW. It's an open platform. I send my StreamYard link out to anyone who wants to join, as long as you have a camera, because you're not coming on and saying anything crazy without your face on the internet and getting me canceled. But yeah, it's open platform to anyone. Come on and plug their stuff, whether you're a content creator or a wrestler or anything. Just come hang out and let's watch Raw, SmackDown, and AEW.